Welcome to the Deep Dive, where we take the sources you share, filter out the noise, and deliver the concentrated knowledge you need. Today, we are taking a sledgehammer to the glass towers of the video game industry. We're going to analyze the modern state of AAA gaming and investigate a phenomenon we've been calling remake purgatory.
Yeah, that feels like the right word for it.
It really does. You sent us sources that they paint a picture of an industry that feels completely paralyzed. These major studios, these giants of entertainment, seem unwilling to risk a single cent on a new idea or a new world or a new character.
Right.
So our mission in this deep dive is, well, it's simple. We want to distill the core financial, structural, and demographic drivers that have caused this huge shift away from new intellectual property.
We need to figure out why right now just recycling the stories we played 20 years ago is somehow the most profitable thing you can do.
Exactly. And we have to start with the data point that, for me, just defined the whole problem. That's what stopped me in my tracks. A massive analytical report from Q1 2026. It revealed that out of the top 10 best-selling games across the PS5 Pro and Xbox, a shocking 7 of them, that's 70%, were either remakes, remasters, or just predictable numbered sequels.
And that statistic is, it's more than just surprising. It's a total indictment of creative risk-taking at the highest levels.
It is.
And if you break down that 30% that were new, the sources contextualize it even more.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Only 3 of those top 10 games were genuinely new IPs, and 2 of those 3 were, they were failed attempts at that live service model that everyone's chasing.
So single-player narrative risk-taking is basically dead in the big-budget space.
Effectively, yeah. Look at the companies that have come back after years of being dormant. Konami's back, right, but only with proven titles. Remakes of Metal Gear Solid and Silent Hill.
Right. The sure things.
The surest things. And even Sony, a company that pioneered massive new franchises just last generation, like Horizon or Ghost of Tsushima.
Yeah, they were known for it.
Is now focusing on remastering its entire PS4 back catalog, probably just to have filler for the PS4 launch. The sources are clear on this. The gaming industry has become a mirror of Hollywood. Nobody greenlights a new script unless it has a proven name on it.
Okay, so if the symptom is this paralyzing lack of new ideas, we have to get into the underlying pathology. And that takes us to the main root cause, what one source called the financial gravity of development.
The $500 million rule.
Yes, that phrase you flagged, the $500 million rule. It sounds like it's the key to this whole thing. What is it exactly? Why is that $500 million number the trigger?
Because it's the point of no return. We have to look at how development costs have just inflated so far beyond standard economic inflation.
Right.
The sources remind us that back in 2010, developing a huge groundbreaking game like the original Gears of War cost around $60 million. If that game underperformed, the studio suffered, sure, but it wasn't a death sentence. It was a recoverable loss.
And now, in 2026.
Contrast that with today. The cost for a standard high-fidelity AAA game, we're talking the scale of a GTA VI or the next Elder Scrolls, it easily blows past $300 million for development.
$300.
And frequently crosses that $500 million mark. And remember, that number often excludes the global marketing budget.
Oh, wow.
Which can add another $100, maybe $200 million on top of that.
So help me understand why. Why has it ballooned so much? Mm-hmm. Is it just paying people more or is it something else?
It's consumer expectation and hyper-realism. Yeah. You mentioned the $500 million rule. Well, the sources highlight that this cost isn't just salary inflation. It's the cost of chasing absolute visual fidelity.
Okay.
Think about the complexity. We're using photogrammetry to scan real-world objects. We need huge teams across multiple continents.
Sure.
The technical ambition means you need thousands of people working on hundreds of thousands of assets. That's where the money goes.
That's terrifying. If you're investing $500 million just to get the product out, what do you need to see in sales just to keep the lights on?
The math is it's unforgiving. If we assume a typical revenue split and that $500 million budget, the company has to sell at least 10 million copies of that game at full price.
10 million just to break even.
Just to break even, not profit, just to cover the investment. That is the minimum bar for success now.
Which puts the decision makers, like the CFO, in an impossible spot. It's the CFO's dilemma, right? If failure means total financial oblivion, which option is the guarantee?
Exactly.
Is it option A, risk that $500 million on a brand new IP where the player has to learn everything from scratch? Or option B, a remake of a universally beloved title, like Resident Evil 4, which people already know and love?
And the answer in every major publisher's boardroom is unanimously option B.
Of course.
Risking that kind of money on a new IP is, in 2026, it's just considered financial suicide. The source material is very clear about the human consequences when you take that risk and fail.
Like what?
We saw recent new IPs, games like Forspoken or Immortals of Avium, when they failed to hit that 10 million copy threshold, it led directly to massive studio closures. Layoffs impacting hundreds, sometimes 1,000 developers, just gone overnight.
So the cost of failure isn't just red ink anymore, it's structural collapse.
Yes.
Okay, so the supply side is crippled by debt and the fear of failure. But that pressure wouldn't exist if there wasn't a market waiting for it. So let's pivot to the downside. Tell me about the people actually funding this system, the demographic you flagged as the gray gamer economy.
This might be the bitterest pill for creative developers to swallow. The sources show a clear demographic split. Younger gamers, Gen Z, Gen Alpha, they spend their disposable income, if they have any, mainly on live service games, Fortnite skins, Roblox currency.
That's where their money goes.
Right. The actual purchasing power for those expensive $70 massive narrative games, it lies squarely with millennials. We're talking about the group born in the 80s and early 90s. They're 30 to 45 years old now.
So they have the income.
They have the income, but the critical thing they lack is time. They might only have 2 hours a week, you know, late on a Friday night to play a game.
And that's where the psychology kicks in. If you only have 2 hours, you absolutely do not want to spend half of it learning a new complicated control scheme just to find out the game is bad.
You want known quality. That's the entire business model. The gray gamer wants to instantly recapture that feeling they had 20 years ago playing a classic like Silent Hill 2, but they want it with 4K graphics and modern controls.
So the studios realize the most profitable thing is literally selling lost childhoods back to adults.
It's an emotional transaction with a guaranteed return because the quality, the emotional core, is already proven.
But wait, I mean, isn't catering to your core demographic just smart business? Shouldn't a company always cater to the people with the wallets, even if it stifles pure creativity?
That is the cynical reality of it, yes.
Yeah.
It is smart business, and it's amplified by external financial pressures, what the sources call the Wall Street effect. This industry isn't run by passionate creatives anymore, not primarily. It's run by the mandate of quarterly shareholder reports. If you're a publicly traded company, EA, Activision, Take-Two, you are legally obligated to show growth quarter after quarter.
And those shareholders don't care about art.
They care about predictable green profit charts.
And there is nothing Wall Street hates more than uncertainty. A new IP is just a massive question mark on a balance sheet.
Exactly. They are terrified of that question mark. But as a source points out, when a studio reports, "We plan to remake the Mass Effect trilogy in Unreal Engine 5, the shareholders are thrilled.
Why? Because it's predictable.
Because the company can show 10 years of historical sales data for that trilogy. The future profit is therefore predictable, and they can model the stock price. That relentless pressure for predictability is what's strangling creative novelty before it even gets off the ground.
Let's shift to the structural damage then.
Yeah.
It's not just that AAA companies are only making sequels. The sources talk about the collateral damage to the whole creative structure. The extinction of the industry's middle class.
Yeah.
The death of AA games.
This is, in my opinion, the most tragic part of the $500 million rule. The middle tier of gaming used to be the AA or B tier game. These were titles with moderate budgets, say $20 to $50 million.
Right, not graphical showpieces.
No, but they were the laboratory of creativity. Mm-hmm. This is where you took a chance on a weird, unconventional idea that could never support a $500 million investment. Think about early games like Psychonauts or Mirror's Edge.
Or even the first Dead Space.
Exactly. They could be quirky, a bit rough, but they were engines of innovation. If they were successful, those ideas and developers had a path to graduate to full AAA status.
So if the budget is now either $2 million for an indie or $500 million for a blockbuster, the middle class is just gone. What happened to those studios?
They've been erased or repurposed. Today, you're either a tiny indie team on Kickstarter or you're a massive multi-studio project. Former AA studios, like teams under THQ or at Sony Japan, have either been shut down or, more often, they've been absorbed by the giants.
And when they're absorbed, they're relegated.
Completely. They don't develop original content. They become support studios, making texture assets or polishing the UI for Call of Duty or FIFA. that potential for upward mobility, for experimenting, it's gone. The industry has lost its proving grounds.
The sources bring up a fascinating and kind of delicious plot twist here. This illusion of financial safety built on nostalgia, it's starting to crumble.
It is. Nostalgia is not an infinite resource. Even remakes are starting to fail.
How so?
The market is just hitting a saturation point. The Grey Gamer's wallet isn't limitless. We've seen periods where three separate horror game remakes release in a single month. It overwhelms the consumer.
Decision fatigue.
Right. And the best evidence for this saturation was the commercial failure of the Splinter Cell remake. The source notes, it got genuinely good reviews. It was a great game, but it sold poorly. That was a huge wake-up call.
Gamers are starting to push back.
They're starting to question the value. Why pay a full $70 for a story you memorized 2 decades ago just for shinier graphics? The remake market is becoming cannibalistic.
That sounds like the first crack in remake purgatory. So if the big glass towers are no longer places for originality, where is all that creative energy going? We must be seeing a brain drain of top talent.
Absolutely. The top creators are walking away from the big money. The former directors and lead designers from The Witcher, GTA, Uncharted, they have all voluntarily left their major studio jobs.
They've had enough.
Enough of shareholder meetings overriding their artistic vision. They're founding smaller, independent teams. They're intentionally seeking smaller budgets and smaller scope because that lower cost, the opposite of the $500 million rule, gives them back their creative freedom.
So the hope has been decentralized. It's moved out of the corporate HQ. Where should you be looking for real innovation today?
You should be looking at the teams that still dare to be unconventional. The hope now resides with focused, smaller studios like Supergent Games, who made Hades or Kojima Productions. People who refuse to work under the strict oversight of a publicly traded giant.
So creativity has packed its bags.
It has. It's left the high-rise headquarters and, as one source beautifully put it, moved back into small garages and remote teams.
So the industry is stuck in this financial loop, but innovators are finding a loophole by going small. Let's go back to the root problem, though. That $500 million cost. Can technology, the very thing that drove the costs up, actually solve the problem it created? What about AI?
This is the big speculative hope for the next 5 to 10 years, but it offers the most tangible salvation. If AI tools can genuinely automate the tedious parts of development, not the core creative direction, but the labor, that cost curve could be shattered.
What kind of labor are we talking about?
Things like applying moss textures to 10,000 unique rocks in an environment, which currently takes countless artist hours, or generating real-time dialogue for minor characters, or using procedural AI to build and populate huge environments instead of having 100 designers hand-placing every single bush.
So AI isn't writing the next great story, but it might eliminate 90% of the repetitive manual work that costs millions.
Precisely. If the cost of development drops from $500 million back down to, say, $50 million, the financial risk largely disappears. A $50 million failure isn't fiscal suicide, it's a tax write-off. That cost reduction might finally give studios the courage to take creative risks again.
So we've taken this deep dive and found an industry stuck in remake purgatory. It's driven by the logic of massive budgets and the demands of the nostalgic gray gamer. The reality is the industry's peak graphics are masking a lack of creative heart.
It's the ultimate trade-off, isn't it? We get unparalleled visual fidelity, but delivered almost exclusively through repetitive, predictable experiences. The games have never looked better, and yet they feel so safe.
Which brings us back to you, the listener. The companies are following the money. And right now, the money says you want nostalgia. They're catering to the safe bet because the cost of failure is just too high. But the only final signal the market truly understands is your purchasing decision. Perhaps the only way out of this purgatory is to change our buying habits. Maybe it's time to stop pre-ordering the 10th version of Skyrim and instead spend that $70 on a weird, new, unconventional game from an independent studio.
It's the only way to send a message.
It is. It's the only way to signal to the market we are still alive and we want something new.